out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday, the 23rd of February, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, on Radio Arian. Normally, I would have Florian Geyer with me as my co-host, as it's Friday, but he's not in the studio at the moment. He will, however, have a Mysterium Fasces for us on Monday, so we can look forward to that. But you're just going to have to put up with me today on my own. A subject that I'd like to talk about really was inspired by listening to Pelasgian narrations yesterday on the new Bulgarian female, which I urge people to listen to. It was a really good podcast. Lots of really good points raised there by a young female in the 30s, a young National Socialist female who was writing these articles for a Bulgarian audience that she thought would be National Socialist and the bright new future that National Socialism gave to two people. And the final part, or the final chapter in the episode, dealt with eugenics. And eugenics is a subject that I think people misunderstand. A lot of people misunderstand it. A lot of people say, how can you be a Christian? How can you support the killing of innocent life? Well, man was created in God's image. If you're a Christian, you believe that man was created in the image of God. That means that a man that is deformed and mentally not all there is a mockery of the image of God. That's not God. God's not disabled. God's perfect. And man should be perfect, and we should be striving to make ourselves perfect. And one of the points that was raised in this podcast is the fact that we look after our breeds. We have such a thing as animal husbandry, and we try to improve the breeds all the time. And we don't just do it with animals, we do it with plants as well. This is why we have the crops that we do. This is why we have corn and wheat. In the wild, they don't grow like that. It's been through thousands of years of crossbreeding and trying to improve these strains that we've got the food that we eat today and the animals that we create today, domesticating the animals and all the different breeds that we have of them. And yet when it comes to man, we just think it's perfectly fine. Everybody should have the right to breed. Well, that's not fair. And one of the points that was raised in this podcast was that it's not fair on the rest of the family. When you have a disabled child, okay, the mother might say, well, I want my disabled child to live. It's a life and all the rest of it. Okay, she wants to put up with that. But what about the rest of the family? What about the brothers and sisters that are going to have to look after the disabled child, and the disabled child is going to impinge on their lives, and the disabled child himself is going to have a defective body and a defect, possibly a defective mind. And what about the rights of the child in this? What about the right of a child to be born into a healthy body with a healthy mind, with all the potential that a human being should have, a white man, all the potential that man should have? Every child should have the right to be born with that potential and to be able to reach the fullness of their potential. And if you've got disabled children being born, then there's no way they can reach the full potential of humanity. Right from the very start, they are going to be hampered. You can't fit more than a pint of water into a pint glass. And depending on the biology, and depending on the DNA that somebody has, that's the absolute limits. That's the limit of what they will be able to achieve. And people just don't think about it in those terms. And they should do. They really should do. Because if the child isn't born, if the disabled child isn't born, then that the chances are that they'll be born into a body that does function, because they would never have been here. The mother could have another go at having a child and have a child that was perfect, or the mother could adopt a child that was perfect from a baby, and that would be the replacement, and the replacement would be absolutely perfect, and the child that was disabled would have never been. And there are different ways that we can encourage this. It's called racial hygiene. It's basically ensuring that the race improves itself and doesn't become contaminated by inferior elements, inferior DNA with genetic diseases and Down syndrome and all these other... I mean, there are some really, really horrific genetic diseases out there that children are born with, and there's no need for them to go through so much suffering. You know, this is what it's about. It's about suffering. When you look at pictures of Adolf Hitler with the children around him, the children absolutely loved him because he gave the children the right to be born into a healthy body. No more were children going to be born with dementia and no arms and legs or bodies that don't function. You imagine what it's like to be a child and you can't go out and play football. Everyone else can go out and play football. Everyone else can go out and play sport, and you can't. Because if you kick a ball, you'll break your bones. Or you can't go out because you're in pain all the time, and you're in absolute agony, and you have to be on pain-killing drugs all your life, and you're having fits. Yeah, this isn't any life. This isn't what life is supposed to be like. Life isn't supposed to be torture. I mean, life can be hard enough as it is without having to face the challenges of life whilst also having a defective body and a demented mind. We need to be protecting children from this and ensuring that they're not born like this, that they have the best chance possible. And the way to do that, we can test people genetically now, and we can see whether they have a propensity towards genetic diseases. And what they did back then, they encouraged these people to adopt. They were given rewards for adopting and not for interbreeding themselves. And they would do this with people that were alcoholics, people that were criminals, because diseases get passed down genetically, but a propensity to criminality is also passed down genetically. So compulsive criminals, say, they would be encouraged, be rewarded not to have children. And you could also offer even more of a reward for these people to get sterilized. So alcoholics would get sterilized, compulsive criminals would get sterilized, people with genetic diseases would get sterilized. If it was just a genetic disease and they were upstanding members of society, then they would be rewarded for adopting. So that's one way that you could go about it. You could also, I think it's also quite right if for the state to enforce it, to enforce sterility, because it's the state that has to stand up for people's rights. And at the moment, the state does not stand up for the unborn child's rights. The state allows mothers to just murder their babies in the womb. If you had a National Socialist state, they would not be able to just abort their babies as a form of contraception. But I do support the idea of the state ensuring that babies aren't born with these diseases, these genetic diseases. So anybody that... did get pregnant, did have a genetic disease, then it could be aborted. And I would go one step further. I would say that mulattoes and mixed race, again, that's a That's a crime against the child. That's a child that will not look like either of his parents, will not identify with either of his parents, will have no ethnic nation that he belongs to, will have no culture of his own. He's going to feel schizophrenic. It's a form of schizophrenia, because a dog cannot serve two masters. And if you've got the DNA of one race in you mixed up with the DNA of another, I mean, that's an absolute tragedy. That's a curse that's been put on that child. Children should have the right not to be born into a body like that. So I would go one step further. I would say we should stop disabled people being born. We should stop mixed race people being born. As I say, we could reward the parents, but as far as parents interbreeding of different races, that should be banned, exactly as it was 100 years ago in America. You couldn't miscegenate. Miscegenation was a crime, and that's the reason for it being a crime is because of what it does to the child. These parents that give birth to these abominations. It's just the height of criminality to do that. I mean, that isn't just going to last for one generation. That's going to continue long after they're dead and gone. There are going to be mixed race descendants of theirs hating them for doing that, and hating the state for allowing their parents to do that. I mean, what kind of a people are we where we don't care about the rights of the baby? The rights of the child, that is the real right of the child, is to be born into a healthy, functioning body. Not so a child can consent to sex with a pedophile, which is what the UNESCO and United Nations rights of the child is all about. It's about children being able to consent, which children cannot do. Children are innocent. They're innocent unless they have their innocence taken away, or until they become an adolescent and learn about life, but they cannot give informed consent. But this rights of the child that the United Nations talks about, it's got nothing to do with children having a right to a healthy, functioning body. And I think this is the Christian way people should be. You know, we don't want to see suffering in the world. And if we can eliminate it before it even starts, then what's wrong with that? Now, something else that often goes along with the euthanasia discussion, along with the eugenics discussion, is euthanasia, which is mercy killing. And once you actually have a person that is alive, then it's a different matter. If somebody is old and they're wanting doctors to kill them, well, no, they shouldn't, you know, that's not right. But if somebody is in pain and is suffering and life is just too much for them, in National Socialist Germany, what happened was, if doctors said that the child was suffering too much, and the parents said the child was suffering too much, and another doctor said the child was suffering too much, then it could be signed off that there could be a mercy killing. But they didn't just go out and kill people. It was the parents of these children that were suffering and that were in intense pain. It was never done because the parents couldn't look after the child, or because the parents got tired of the child. It was always done for the benefit of the child. And maybe that's something that we should think about today. And I would add a caveat there, that we do have pain-killing technology. We have very, very effective pain-killing medicine. And there is no reason on earth why anybody should be in any pain in the 21st century. So it would have to, you know, if you're talking mercy killings today, it would have to be people that were in vegetative states, that have got no chance of coming back to life. But I don't think we should be offering euthanasia to people just because they are in pain. And this also brings up another subject that was talked about this week. This was talked about on Chris Cantwell's Radical Agenda, and a caller phoned in, and he was a chronic pain patient that was receiving chronic pain medication, and he made a very, very good point. With all the hysteria that we have about pain medication and about OxyContin and fentanyl and doctors in America that are handing out these prescriptions like sweets, if they cut back on that, it means people are going to be suffering. People are going to be in pain. Now, I'm of the opinion that it's better to overprescribe than it is to underprescribe. If you underprescribe, then you end up with people just wanting to die. You end up with people wanting to kill themselves because they are in pain. I mean, we have a problem over here in Britain with doctors not prescribing painkilling medication when they should be because they're frightened. They're frightened of the potential for addiction. But the majority of people that are prescribed it don't become addicted. And again, here's where people get confused. They mix up addiction with dependence. Anybody that is put on painkilling medication will become dependent on it. If they use it for longer than 2 weeks, they will be dependent on it. But that does not mean they are addicted to it. Addiction is a compulsive urge to redose after being given your dose. So there's a difference there. And this is where the problem comes in when we see these heroin addicts that are having to steal to feed their what people think is an addiction. A large portion of that is dependence. They're absolutely dependent on the drug. And they cannot function without it. And then on top of that, because of the route of administration, which is injecting, that makes it very addictive. They become addicted to the rush of doing it. And also where it's illegal, it becomes in varying different strengths. So they can never actually take the or know exactly what dose it is that they're taking. So they're constantly taking higher doses and lower doses. And all of that, it encourages addiction. And people are dependent upon wearing their glasses. They can't function without them. But you wouldn't say that they're addicted to them. So there's a difference between addiction and dependence. And surely it is better that we overprescribe than underprescribe. If you've ever seen anyone in agony, then you certainly do not want to see that prolonged. You would not want them to be denied pain relief just out of a fear that they might abuse it. As I say, it's only about 1% of people that prescribed pain medication that actually become addicted. And when you hear these reports on OxyContin, a lot of the time they are mixing this up. And they're saying, well, how can they say that this is non-addictive when it's an opioid? When they say only 1% become addicted to it. Well, if people were taking it with its time release, because don't forget, it's the rapid onset of effects that gives something addictive potential. So when they were saying that this stuff is not addictive, of course, it's dependency inducing. People are going to become dependent on it. But what they meant by it's not addictive is that if it's taken with its time release, they'll just be taking it twice a day at the dose they should be taking it at. And this chap that phoned in, luckily he only required a small dose of OxyContin, so he was fine. But everybody has a different tolerance to these medicines and medications as well. So he may only need a small dose of it, and other people may need absolutely massive doses of it. And the people that need the massive doses of it, they are going to be viewed as if they are addicted or as if they're trying to get more than they should do. And again, they'll be suffering. So I'm of the opinion that we do not need to see suffering in the world. And by being overly cautious, we increase the suffering at the expense of the very people that these medicines are intended for in the first place. A lot of this is down to the presence of these illegal drugs and people getting addicted to them and all the problems that are caused with them. And if you've got people that are addicted to this OxyContin stuff, or not addicted, but are dependent on this OxyContin stuff, and they haven't actually been given enough of it, then they will show symptoms that look very similar to as if they were addicted. But what could really be the case is just that they have a tolerance and they're not being prescribed enough. because there are people that are prescribed these drugs for their whole lives, and they function absolutely fine. There are people that are prescribed pain medication when they're children that have to be on it for the rest of their lives. And with relatively few side effects or illnesses associated with it, and their tolerance doesn't go up either. They stay on a regular dose. As I say, the chap that phoned in to Chris Cantwell, he was very lucky because all the regular dose that he needed is a minimum dose. So we have to be careful about these things. I know that there's this epidemic of what they're calling OxyContin addiction in America. But the way to deal with that is for the doctors to give the people the amount that they require, which will take care of the dependent side of it. And the patients should be taking the minimum amount that they possibly can. If you take that away from them, if you take the medicine away from them, then the chances are that they're going to go trying to buy it on the black market because they won't be able to function without it. And you'll actually increase the drug problems that you've got over there. On another unrelated subject, earlier this week I did a podcast with Nat Dainlaw, and we were talking about Satanists and people infiltrating nationalist forums and nationalist groups and seeking to subvert them and corrupt the people within these organizations. And maybe it'd be an idea to talk a little bit more about that, because it is a problem, and the source of the problem is not holding high enough moral standards for the people that join. And it's exacerbated by edgy memes and people thinking what they're doing is funny. And there was a message left on that podcast which was saying where people come from 4chan culture and they're used to seeing gore and child pornography and all this sort of stuff, and they're used to seeing it taken in a humorous light. But when you have that on a website, then the real child pornographers and the real pedophiles and the real Satanists find it very easy to infiltrate and start posting their stuff. And what they're doing is they're sending out feelers to try and see if there's anybody who is susceptible to their ideology, and encouraging people to be like them. I mean, we're all very angry at what's gone on in the world. And there are people that will take advantage of that, and they want to turn us into the very people that we are resisting. I mean, this is the whole point of why we have Jews. They want to turn us like themselves. They want to corrupt us. They want to make us miscegenated. They want to make the white race a mixed race. They want to encourage homosexuality. They want to encourage usury. They want to encourage child pornography. They want to do everything they can to corrupt us. And by doing that, they strengthen us when we resist them. And this is the thing that National Socialists understand is it's the struggle. It's that resistance. It's us resisting against that negative force that improves ourselves, improves our characters. And these people that go on these websites and encourage this sort of stuff. I know people say, oh, well, you know, we're not Christian or what have you. But if you were Christian and if you did hold to the morals of Christianity, these people couldn't infiltrate the websites. They just couldn't infiltrate them. You'd be saying, well, there's no need for that, like, to use that language for a start. I mean, these people that do infiltration, they all can't help themselves from swearing. I mean, that's just one instance, one telltale instance. Every single one of them will be swearing, and they will be trying to drop pornography in there and will be encouraging bad behavior. I mean, if you can't, you know, if you can control what comes out of your mouth, then you are going to be much better at controlling the other things in your life. I mean, it's such a simple thing to control the words that come out of your mouth. You would think it was a simple thing, but for many people it isn't, and they have a real difficulty with it. And people that are trying to infiltrate and subvert and corrupt and be agent provocateurs, you know, they are really foul-mouthed people. And you become sensitive to this after a while, and And you can spot the warning signs. You may not always be right, but you can spot the warning signs in these people. And if you have a culture that is just looking for what's going to be the next step, the edgiest meme, then, you know, you're not going to be able to weed these people out, because they're going to be the ones that are making the edgiest memes. Like, as the instance that I gave the other day, this guy calling himself Rape, I thought that is a red flag. That would be a red flag for me. And yet, where the people around him weren't aware of these things, they just thought, oh, well, that's just edgy. That, isn't that funny? That's taking things one step further, isn't it? That hasn't been done before. And that's what these pedophiles do, you know. They try to do their acts. They try to be sicker than anybody else. And I'm not going to mention some of the things that they've done, but when you hear of something, you know, really horrific, that's what they're doing. It's not a sexual preference. It's about doing evil for evil's sake. I mean, these people know that they are serving Satan. And this is one of the problems that we have, is people don't believe in a God, and they don't believe in a Satan. And, you know, if you don't believe in the person that's actually behind causing, you know, causing the problems for us, then how can you identify the problem? How can you fight against something that you don't even believe in? We've also got the problem of people thinking that to be against the Jews means you've got to be against Christianity. And of course, the enemy of Christianity is Satan. So why don't we say we're Satanists? Why don't we support Satan? That comes into it as well. But if you hold people to just Christian standards of morality, then that would keep these people out. And it's not just the freelance Satanists and the perverts. It's also the intelligence agencies. That's the way they operate. They will move into a website and they will start posting pornography and encouraging the mistreatment of women and anything that they can do to make the people on that website look bad to other people that see the comments on there. I mean, that's a large part of it. I mean, anyone that has been following the Gab feed that was to do with these Satanists that infiltrated a nationalist organization will be quite shocked at what they saw on there. And this is exactly what an infiltrator or an agent provocateur wants to do. They want to make the website look unappealing to new people. And the people that are actually there, that have been using it for a long time, they're going to see it as humor. They're going to think it's funny. They're going to think it's edgy. But if you're looking from the outside in, you'd be really shocked at that and turned off by it and say, I don't want anything to do with this. You know, this is, you know, one of the reasons what I have against this idea of white Sharia. I mean, what does that look like to people that are looking from the outside in, or talking about raping women, all this sort of nonsense? It just looks dreadful to people looking from the outside in. People that have followed it for years or whatever, they just see it as edgy. But very, very easy for somebody that's just trying to subvert and make the movement look bad to, and who is clever at doing this sort of stuff, because often these people are creative. So I see a lot of Satanists in music and in film. They will be quite talented at it. But as I say, the thing to watch out for is the subversiveness of it and the corrupted character and the encouragement of the things that we should be fighting against, the encouragement of vice. That's what these people want to do, is encourage vice. So if you resist that, then they can't infiltrate your organization and they can't make you look bad. And when people see the comments and they see that people are good people, they're decent people, then they question the lies they've been told about nationalists and they come and join us. You know, we need to be setting a good example and we need to be striving to improve ourselves. And we need to hold the people that we listen to a high standard. You know, so many times things have fallen apart because of bad character issues in the people that have been leading them. So we've got to hold people to a high standard. We've got to hold ourselves to a high standard. And that way we will prevent these infiltrators from getting anywhere near us. And we'll also improve ourselves, which is what it's all about. That's what National Socialism is about. It's about improving yourself and relishing the struggle and doing everything that you do with all your heart and mind and, you know, doing the very, very best that you can. And if you do that, you'll be contented and no man can ask more of you. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the podcast. Thank you for listening. I'll be back on Monday, hopefully with Simon Shepherd. I have yet to find out how his court case went. So until then, have a great weekend. God bless and hail victory.